Joydeep Roy Bhattacharya, the last time we talked, you had just released a book about a storyteller in Marrakesh. Now you've moved into a distant corner of Afghanistan, along with a story out of classical Greek literature. That's a big move.
Still dealing with human issues, love, life, death. I guess just the milieu is different, and it's much more topical in terms of what's affecting ordinary Americans in terms of the casualties in the war. And I find there is an absence of understanding and beyond the news. We're all flooded with information, but that doesn't necessarily promote wisdom or understanding. And I think within the context of a book, and especially a novel, that a reader can take into his or her intimate reading space and spend time thinking about it, it's not so much a big move on my part as, and I suppose, an extension of my hand in terms of trying to bridge gaps in cultures, gaps in civilization. So I'm still doing that. I mean, last year was Morocco, this year's Afghanistan, next year actually is going to be Iran, so I'll be back.
This is both the struggle within a military base that's just been attacked by somebody, it's never quite clear who, but essentially it's based on Antigone. Why Antigone?
Because she's one of these archetypal figures who has managed to transcend 2,000 years and still feel very contemporary in terms of her attachment to family versus the moral value system she upholds, which is her right to bury her brother killed in battle. And as much as she was alive 2,000 years ago in Greece, here is an Antigone figure 2,000 years later in Afghanistan with exactly the same request, the need to bury a brother killed in battle. Her allegiance to her family running up against the rule of law, the state, the state's own imperatives.
The difference, of course, is that Antigone is written within the context of classical Greece. Your book, The Watch, is written as, terrible phrase, clash of civilizations between your woman who's trying to rescue her brother and the American soldiers and the interpreter at the base.
There have been variations on that theme ever since Sophocles first wrote it. So the Antigones of the 20th century, we had Bertolt Brecht base it in Nazi Germany. We had Jean Anouilh base it in France under the Nazi occupation. I think there's something about this figure in terms of the fact that she seems to transcend civilizational attachments. I didn't have any problems placing her in an Eastern setting, this very Western myth, and instantly getting readers, both in the East and the West, to know exactly what she was talking about.
Did you interview American soldiers, or how did it work? Because you have a series. You have the commander of this little base, and right down to the interpreter who's just been rotated in.
I wrote the first draft without knowing a single American soldier, officer, NCO, whatever. But after the first draft was written, I turned to a friend who had plenty of American contacts in the American Army, and then essentially the manuscript, that draft, passed from soldier to soldier, who technically proofread it according to his or her specialization, as a result of which I wouldn't call them interviews. We've become very good friends. I have a whole network of friends in the American Army now, two of whom are attending this reading. They're both captains. And I know much more now about the United States military than I did when I actually wrote the entire book without knowing a single individual. And, of course, there were a lot of small bloopers, but the book as such held true.
Now, your female character comes out of a valley off in the middle of nowhere and has very little idea about who these American troops are. And the American troops in your book have very little idea about the people who live around there, except they keep shooting at them. It's this clash.
You know, I just finished reading a book by a Texas professor called Frank Hall called Into the Land of Bones, and it's about Alexander's campaign in Afghanistan. which lasted for 7 years, and Hole's done a very interesting thing. He's written the book, and he constantly brings in allusions to the British, Soviet, and American disasters. So here you have the Macedonian army, 2,000 years ago, a Greek army, which has just defeated every major army on the way to Afghanistan, including the Persians, running aground in precisely Afghanistan. And by the end of that 7 years, that proud army has been reduced to, you know, shreds, and leave with relief, get into the plains of India. But the only way they can exit is by bribing tribes, buying off allegiances, doing exactly the kinds of things we're doing today. So it's a tough part of the world.
The woman in the book knows exactly who she is and why she's there. You make it clear that most of the soldiers basically are there just because they're soldiers.
Well, most of the soldiers are there basically just because they get a regular paycheck. And the alternative to being there would be, for many of these men, a dead-end existence in middle America with, you know, crystal meth or working in a 7-Eleven being, you know, a couple of alternatives. She knows her place because it's always fascinated me. Traditional village communities, even the way they used to be in the West. I mean, think of the book, How Green Was My Valley. People knew their place, and they were content knowing their place within a confined society, if you will, their place in the family. Okay, so you're the middle brother, right? Whereas you have these young kids, and the soldiers are young kids. The grunts vary between the ages of 18 to 21. The officers are in their late 20s, and they are called old men. They have plenty of technical training, but they are thrust into these foreign places, Iraq and Afghanistan, with no cultural training. And they are floundering because they are trained in conventional war fighting, and they are fighting ghosts, IEDs. It's guerrilla warfare with a twist. Of course, guerrilla warfare today is called COIN. I forget what it stands for. I'm having a mental block. But
counterinsurgency.
Thank you. I mean, their major enemy is the IED, which is the next step they take the moment they leave the base. And here they are confined in these bases. It's a totally claustrophobic situation with 24/7 trauma and stress, which probably accounts for the fact that the emotional cost of this war on these kids is very high. The New York Times published a report just a few days ago that between January and the end of May this year, the number of suicides in the American Army, both vets and serving soldiers, the number is 158, is greater than combat casualties, which is a staggering figure if you take into account that these suicides are happening in an age group that is literally college age.
Thank you. Joydeep Roy Bhattacharya.
Thank you.